From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On Sunday, Palestinians go to the polls to elect a new president. It will be the first election there since 1996, the first since the beginning of the Second Intifada, the first without Yasser Arafat's name on the ballot. And some are daring to dream of a fresh chance at peace in the Middle East. One Israeli official called it a, quote, ray of hope streaming through a window of opportunity. The stakes are large for Palestinians, Israelis, and the United States. Tonight on Point, the Palestinian presidential election and a rare chance to reboot in the Middle East. We begin tonight in the Gaza Strip, where yesterday an Israeli tank shell killed seven Palestinians, overshadowing a day of campaigning in the territory by Mahmoud Abbas, the longtime moderate who polls show is holding a strong lead in the run-up to Sunday's presidential election. Molly Moore is a correspondent for The Washington Post. She joined me from Gaza City. I asked her to describe Palestinians' outlook in the final days before the election.
There's a lot of excitement, Tom, about the election here. Just driving through the streets, you see posters all over the walls and graffiti all over the walls advertising the various candidates and advertising also slogans just telling people to go out and vote. And when you talk to the people in the streets, they're very enthusiastic about it. There hasn't been an election here for president since 1996. And, of course, there was no question at that time that Yasser Arafat would win the election. Now, one difference this time, there's also not much question in this election as to who's going to win Sunday. Mahmoud Abbas, who served very briefly as prime minister under Yasser Arafat. However, what the people in the street say is this is the first time we feel like we can go to the polls and have our voices heard. It's the beginning of democracy.
And what exactly are they hopeful about? Democracy itself or some outcome from democracy? Less corruption, more peace? What's seen as implicit in greater democratization?
They want a little bit of all of the above. One of the first things they want is the outside world, other countries, to look at them as a democracy and to take seriously their concerns. There's great concern among Palestinians that as this intifada has dragged on for 4 years with the suicide bombings in Israel, that the Palestinian cause has, in fact, very much been hurt in international eyes. So they would like to see improvement in their image abroad. But internally, one of the main things they want is an end to corruption. They want reforms in the Palestinian Authority. They want economic reforms. Many of the issues are pocketbook issues, just like you would have in the United States or anywhere else. This intifada has sent unemployment in some communities and neighborhoods as high as 60%.
Is there a sense that if Mahmoud Abbas is elected, as expected, with his moderate reputation and background, that he can put an end to attacks coming from Hamas and others that have been so key to the intifada? Can he dampen the violence, or might he be vulnerable to it?
This is the big question at the moment. And as we saw here in Gaza just this week, 2 days ago on the campaign trail, Abu Mazen was here, and he asked the militant groups to stop firing rockets and mortars at Jewish settlements in Gaza and across the border into Israel. And immediately the militant groups went out and fired more rockets and mortars and put out a statement saying that, in fact, they were firing these not in opposition to the Israelis, but in opposition to Abu Mazen's statement. And, of course, in return yesterday, the Israelis returned fire at what they thought were the militants and instead killed seven young boys and teenagers who'd been out working in a nearby strawberry field.
You were out and talked to this family in Gaza that lost those children. A really terrible scene there. No question that there were Palestinians, militants, who fired those rockets, but it seems from your direct reporting that those that died in return were, in fact, farm kids in a strawberry field. But it led to Mahmoud Abbas calling Israel the Zionist enemy. That got a very tough response from Israel.
It did, and because Abu Mazen has been seen as a moderate candidate and is seen by someone as Israel who could help restart the negotiating process and could perhaps be a partner in a negotiation, which Israel, of course, for years now has claimed Yasser Arafat was not. Now, some Israeli officials have looked at this for what it probably was in reality. Abu Mazen had to take domestic considerations into account. He was in Gaza when this happened. It was a horrific incident where 6 of the 7 young men and boys who died were from the same extended family. And while many of the Israeli officials came out very quickly protesting Abu Mazen saying this, others said, look, we have to take into account this is a candidate in an election who has to appeal to his own people, and we hope this won't be his attitude after he's elected, if he's elected.
And beyond that day's news cycle and the tragedy and the death there, we read Israeli officials expressing some optimism. Financial Times quoting an Israeli official talking about a ray of hope streaming through a window of opportunity with this election.
There is that, and there is among Palestinians also. One of the things you hear on the street here, when you ask people who they're going to vote for, they say they're going to vote for Abu Mazen because they feel like he's the candidate that can best bring Israel to the negotiating and win the rights that Palestinians want, win the respect and help of the United States as well. So there is a ray of hope on both sides that this election will help jumpstart what has been a moribund peace process. There's essentially been no peace process out here.
So describe how that might work, Molly Moore. I realize it's utterly impossible to accurately predict, but what's a kind of positive scenario for how a Mahmoud Abbas victory on Sunday might then roll on into progress on the peace front?
Well, one of the things that Israel has said is they have to see a concerted effort by the Palestinian Authority to try to stop the militant groups and to stop the attacks. Now, despite what we've seen in the last few days of these attacks and counterattacks along the Israeli-Gaza border, in recent weeks, Mahmoud Abbas has been meeting with Hamas and other of the militant groups, and Hamas officials have told me that they're ready for a ceasefire if Israel is willing to take some steps and end the occupation of the Gaza Strip and West Bank. The problem is much of this is the same rhetoric we've been hearing for months, and both sides are very entrenched. I think where the ray of hope on both sides come from, that perhaps Abu Mazen can convince the militants to stop their attacks, and then in turn, Israel would slowly grant more freedoms, lift more roadblocks in the Palestinian territories. You're not going to see anything happen overnight here, but I think what both sides are hoping this election might mean is the ball will at least start rolling again.
Molly Moore, always wonderful to have you. Thank you for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Molly Moore is a correspondent with The Washington Post. She spoke with us from Gaza City. We're talking tonight about the upcoming Palestinian presidential election and hopes for new engagement toward peace with Israel. You can join the conversation. After Arafat, is there room for a fresh start? Can Israel and the Palestinians finally break out of their cycle of mutual destruction? What are your greatest hopes and fears for the Palestinian election? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Jerusalem is Mara Rudman, former chief of staff of the National Security Council under Bill Clinton. She is in Jerusalem this week as part of an 80-member election observer mission organized by the National Democratic Institute in Washington. The mission is led by former President Jimmy Carter. Mara Rudman, I know it's late there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So there will be all eyes on this election when it rolls around this weekend. Its legitimacy, very important for the Palestinians and everybody else. Give us a sense of what the observer mission apparatus is like there. It's a heavily militarized area in both Gaza and the West Bank. How will you go about the task of observing these elections?
Sure. Well, there are several different observer missions here. The National Democratic Institute, NDI's mission, is one. There are also Europeans, there are Asians here. And so there'll be fairly significant presence in terms of numbers of observers, at least at different points during the day throughout the West Bank and Gaza. There are challenges in terms of mobility, particularly in Gaza as well as in the West Bank, but there have been people on the ground trying to figure that out. Listen, not just for observers, but more importantly for the people who need to get to voting places. And that's one of the things, frankly, that the observer missions will be looking at is the ability to have access to voting as well as how the voting occurs and how the counting occurs and how it's reported after the fact.
Let's look at both sides of that equation. First, on the Palestinian side, they've been making arrangements to hold these elections. There is, of course, a large militant group there which may or may not want a peaceful outcome. What's it look like in terms of Palestinian preparations? Are they ready? Do they have a good system in place?
Well, I should be clear in saying that the NDI observer delegation has literally just arrived, and so we'll be fully briefed on some of those matters over the next couple of days, but it'd be premature for me to comment at this point. I know there's been a lot of work put into being ready. I would also note that Hamas, I think, is who you're pointing to in terms of boycotting the presidential election, but Hamas did participate in the municipal elections, which were held a couple of
weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And those went quite smoothly. And so I think on the Palestinian side, at least, there's hope that there would not be disruption by any Palestinians of participation in the election process.
And what about from the Israeli side, a heavy military presence in many of these areas? As you said, roadblocks all over the place. Is Israel signaling that it will be cooperative and supportive of the election day effort?
Certainly there's been a lot of press reports and public statements to that end. Again, I will learn more, and the delegation will learn more tomorrow couple days preceding the election on precisely what has been planned out in terms of actual mobility of movement. The public statements have been positive and encouraging about intent. The practice is yet to be seen, I guess.
Legitimacy is very important here. We just heard Molly Moore with the Washington Post saying, and many reports saying, Palestinians want a leadership that is seen as legitimate, perhaps more credible than Yasser Arafat in the eyes of the world. Very high stakes here.
Absolutely high stakes. And a real opportunity for people to make a selection. Now, a lot has been made of the fact that Abu Mazen, also known as Mahmoud Abbas, is certainly by far the leading candidate. But there are eight or nine candidates at this point in the field. There are a range of choices for people to make, and I think that that is also a very positive thing. And remember, this is for people who have really had very few opportunities to vote to select their leadership, whether it's at the Legislative Council level, at the municipal level, or at the presidential level. And so the fact of an election that's free and fair and transparent, is quite significant.
Now, you're in Jerusalem. Of course, East Jerusalem is disputed territory, many Palestinians living there, but they'll be voting, as I understand, by absentee ballot.
Well, I believe that the understanding that has been put in place, though, again, as with mobility to get to voting places, it's still something that the details of which are being worked out. But in 1996, when they had presidential elections and elections to the Palestinian Legislative Council, there was an agreement reached whereby the Israelis could essentially call it absentee voting because Palestinians could go to post offices in Jerusalem to cast their ballots. And so that is some of the kinds of artful compromises that are important to have both sides be able to achieve their objectives and have occur. But voting in Jerusalem is quite a sensitive issue.
So a diplomatic dance around the issue of sovereignty there.
But ideally being able to reach the outcome of having those who Palestinians living in Jerusalem who wish to vote in the Palestinian elections able to do so.
Jimmy Carter is leading your observer delegation. He, of course, played a big role in the past in Middle East peace. He's talking about recently about Ariel Sharon's plan to pull out of Gaza. He called that symbolically a tiny step. He said the main issue is the West Bank. Of course, that's very political language for the leader of an observer delegation. Politics imbue this no matter how you come at it.
I would just point out that President Carter is one of, obviously, as a former president, he has ranking status. But the delegation is also led by Carl Bildt in terms of a European presence. It's an international delegation, not solely American. And also former Governor Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire, and former governor and former EPA administrator Christy Todd Whitman. So it's both a bipartisan delegation in terms of the United States and it's fully American, though President Carter is certainly in the lead among the four leaders of the delegation.
Mara Rudman in Jerusalem, an observer for Sunday's Palestinian elections. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
We're talking tonight about the Palestinians about to elect a new president in hopes of new engagement toward peace with Israel. You can join the conversation after Arafat. Is there room here for a fresh start? Can Israel and the Palestinians break out of their old cycle of mutual distrust and destruction? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We will be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Palestinians about to elect a new president on Sunday and hopes, only hopes at this point, but hopes of new engagement toward peace with Israel. You can join the conversation tonight. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon says there is an opportunity for a historic breakthrough. His words now. Do you agree? And who carries more responsibility for making peace possible now, Israel or the Palestinians? And this was Yasser Arafat. The problem without him, is there a new day? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined now from East Jerusalem by attorney Mazen Kupti. He's a board member of the Khalil Shakakni Center, a group promoting Palestinian culture. He's one of about 500 Palestinian leaders and intellectuals who signed an open letter to the next Palestinian president, even in advance of his election recently, calling for a new era of Palestinian leadership. Oops, and I think, as we just heard right there, we just lost that line from East Jerusalem. We'll try and pick it up very shortly. With me in the studio tonight is Naomi Kazan. She served in the Israeli Knesset from 1992 to 2003, a member of the Meretz Party, former deputy speaker of the Knesset. She's now professor of political science at Hebrew University and currently a visiting scholar at the Center for International Studies at MIT. Naomi Kazan, I'm glad you're here without the need of a tricky phone line. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We're going to hear from several Palestinian voices tonight, but the Israeli side of this equation is very important as well, of course. How do you see this election? What's the context into which it's unfolding, Naomi Kazan? How hopeful do you feel about it?
Look, I think it's a period of immense opportunity and also of great danger. It's the first time there's been any fluidity in the situation for the past 4.5 years, since the outbreak of the second Intifada. And clearly, the term window of opportunity is being used by many people. I think we have to analyze it very carefully because opportunities don't occur. One has to take advantage of them and make them happy. Mm-hmm. Happen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. Clearly, there will be a new Palestinian president Sunday or Monday. Mm-hmm. In all probability, it will be Abu Mazen or Mahmoud Abbas. But one has to look at the Israeli side of the equation much more carefully, because the question is whether the Israeli body politic is capable of taking advantage of the opportunity, just as the question for the Palestinian side stands. And the other question, which I hope you raise later on, is what the international community in general and the United States will do to make this happen.
I promise we'll get to all of that. I think right now from East Jerusalem we have Mazen Kupti again. Mazen Kupti, are you there?
Good evening.
Good evening. Yes, thank you so much for joining us. I know we've got a fragile phone line, so let's dive straight in. What do you think at this point about preparations for Sunday's elections? How optimistic are you that they may mark a new day in a chance for peace with Israel?
Well, let's say the following. I mean, no doubt that this coming election is a very important one for the Palestinians. Many or most of the Palestinians think that after this election, the peace process will be restored, at least as much as they heard the declaration from Washington or even from West Jerusalem saying that the obstacle for the peace process was Yasser Arafat. And here, probably Mr. Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, will be the elected next Palestinian president. From the Palestinian side, everybody thinks that Abu Mazen, is the right partner for the Israelis. This is at least what they have declared. So everybody really waiting what's going to happen after the election. I can tell you there is a very high expectation in the Palestinian streets that after the election, quick move will happen from the side of the Americans and the Israelis, and the process will move forward. And to tell you, I'm very afraid, as much as the expectation is very high, I hope that the disappointment won't be as such.
Mazen Qupty, you call Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, the right partner for Israel. What do you mean by that? Why the right partner?
Let's put it the following. I mean, this issue of the right partner, whether this president or that president, or whether this leader or that leader is the right partner or not, is an Israeli issue, and especially this right-wing government led by Sharon. Sharon, I think, made it an excuse against Arafat by claiming that Arafat is not the right partner for peace process. And we want another leadership. And all the time, the Israelis thought, and they still think that Mr. Abu Mazen is the right partner. So this excuse that there was no partner from the Israeli side, from the Palestinian side, is not there anymore after Sunday, after the election. So actually, after the election, we will see whether the Israelis are serious in the calling for peace and which kind of peace. This is very important. I mean, we know everybody. I mean, among Palestinians, among Israelis, they want peace. The question is, which kind of peace? Which kind of agreement?
Let me ask you on that front, if I may, Mazen Qupty, in East Jerusalem, the letter that you and several hundred other leading Palestinians recently signed calls for a halt to armed attacks. Mahmoud Abbas himself has called for an end to militancy. Is it possible, given the depth of feeling, the depth of commitment on the part of militants, Hamas and others, is it possible for Mahmoud Abbas to bring an end to armed attacks on Israel?
Yes, I think so. I mean, for sure, not by force. I mean, Mr. Abu Mazen cannot force or cannot use force against the Palestinian organization to stop them from using arms against the Israel and the Israeli troops. But what Abu Mazen can do is to try to get an agreement. And actually, he started a long time ago the secret negotiation with different Palestinian organizations on a kind of an agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis that both sides will cease fire for a while to give a chance for peace process or peace negotiation. And I think he can do that. He did it when he was prime minister. It was for a short time, you know. He couldn't. He was in job as prime minister not for a long time. So he did it in the past. So there is no reason why not to do it again. I think he will be given a chance of a few months.
And Mazen Qupty, let me ask you, if I may. We've talked about what the Palestinians are trying to muster here, trying to mount. What do you feel you need as a Palestinian from the Israelis and from the United States to make the peace process potentially work on the other side of this election?
You know, let's start with the daily life. I think this is very important for most of the Palestinians. I mean, the Palestinian daily life since the start of the Intifada become terrible. I mean, the movement from one place to another place, mainly these kind of checkpoints, the killing of many Palestinians almost every day, the ability of people to go out to work to earn their incomes and so on. So the most important, really, the most important thing is the changes in the daily life.
And there you're pointing at the heavy Israeli military presence, I guess.
Yes, I mean, mainly, but also not that, but also different things. For example, when I want to move from Jerusalem to Ramallah, mm-hmm. I have to pass two or three checkpoints to get to there.
Right.
We have many people who work from Jerusalem, works in Ramallah. For them to get to Ramallah, even if it's only 5 or 4 miles, it takes them sometimes 1 hour and 2 hours in each direction just to get to there.
So for Israel to lighten up a bit on the weight of its hand in the West Bank, what about Washington and the United States? What's necessary there?
Well, I mean, you know, long time ago, everybody heard that the solution is in the hand of the United States. And this issue is I mean, more and more Palestinians think that if the United States doesn't move forward, doesn't put its heaviest positions on this issue and try to move the peace process to be more involved, not only more involved, even to force parties to do actual things to move forward in the peace process, nothing will move. I mean, nobody believed that Mr. Sharon alone would move the peace process to its acceptable end, that at least, if not all of the Palestinians, that most of the Palestinians will accept such solutions. So the United States has the major role. Without the United States, I think nothing will move, and we will stay in this dilemma for another many years.
So Palestinian elections coming right up, but things to be done by Israel and the U.S. as well. Mazen Qupty in East Jerusalem, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
You are welcome, sir.
Naomi Hassan, here in Boston, I wish you'd look at those same two pieces, Israel and the U.S. The Palestinians have their piece to do, and they're preparing to do it with this vote, and there'll be much more after the vote in terms of keeping down the violence. What about Israel and the U.S.? What do they need to bring to the party to make this happen?
Let me start first with Israel, and I think there's one piece of the equation that's been missing in this discussion, and that is the really endemic instability of the Israeli government. At the moment, Prime Minister Sharon actually does not have a government. Just today, a small ultra-Orthodox faction agreed to join for a three-month trial period, so he will hopefully have a government, including the Labor Party, next week.
I mean, I thought he had come to this Likud-Labor coalition.
Yes, but it hasn't been formed yet because it still doesn't... Shy of the numbers and won't gather the numbers until the vote of next week. That's problem number one. Problem number two, there's a tremendous amount of unrest within Israel between pro-disengagement and anti-disengagement groups. The far right in Israel is called almost virtually for an insurrection. And therefore, the amount of attention that has been given to the resumption of talks or negotiations has been actually quite small.
Now, the language is evolving here. I want to be sure I keep up. You're saying pro-disengagement and anti-disengagement as opposed to peace. Is this a metaphor for peace?
No,
just about Gaza? Is that what you're talking about?
It's mostly
Sharon's
a discussion
so-called
of the
unilateral withdrawal from Gaza?
Exactly. It's a discussion of the Gaza disengagement plan. And what's been missing from the discussion in Israel, and I just got back from Jerusalem on Monday, was a strong voice talking about negotiations. It exists, but it's mostly in the dovish circles of the Labor Party and in my party, which is Meretz or Yachad now.
So the peace movement is now pro-disengagement.
It's pro-disengagement, but it has to insert the negotiation element, which we heard from Mazen Qupty and from others, into the discourse, the public discourse, in order that there be a real discussion within Israel.
Because some have seen disengagement itself as something well shy of a peace process. It's
of course.
Say, we can't deal with you. To hell with you. We're out of here.
Disengagement is a unilateral measure. And in order to get a peace agreement and a viable and just solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it's necessary to sit down at the negotiating table. So at best, disengagement may be one step towards the negotiating table, but what the Palestinians expect now is a return to the negotiating table, and we have a discrepancy in the discourse between the two.
And you're saying even on that first step of disengagement, Israelis are deeply, fiercely divided. The anti-disengagement folks, is it still the greater Israel dream that they're keeping alive?
Yes.
They want to stay in Gaza, stay in the West Bank?
Yes, indeed. Although the polls are showing consistently over 60% of the Israeli public supports disengagement. And by the way, 75% support return to negotiations. There's still one-third of the public that is opposed to disengagement, and a small group is willing to make that opposition forcefully. So we have a complicated situation on the Israeli side, which again introduces the very crucial role of the United States and the Quartet in bringing the sides to the negotiating table in the post-Arafat era.
And that role being pressuring Israel, is that what you're saying? Or
No, I'm not saying that.
So what's the role for the U.S.?
I think that one has to return at least to phase two and three of the roadmap. It's not entirely dead. Or resurrect the Taba talks. And that requires coordination between the new Palestinian government, the new Israeli government. Two new governments are coming into being next week.
And that's the role for the U.S., the quartet, the bigger powers.
Obviously, because this opportunity is very short. It's very brief. And if one does not take advantage of it now, it may be the end of the two-state solution.
Naomi Kazan, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Falls Church, Virginia, Mohammed Abu Nimer. He's professor at the School of International Service in International Peace and Conflict Resolution, director of the Peace Building and Development Institute at American University. Mohammed Abu Nimer, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
The election's coming up on Sunday. It's not Arafat. He was always described as the obstacle. Are you optimistic? Are we on the brink of a new day here, Mohammed Abu Nimer?
Well, last time I was in your show, we had that conversation, you know, when Arafat dies, mm-hmm. if there is any new opportunities, and I think, you know, this is probably the as my colleague Naomi Kazan said, the window of opportunity too. The question is not whether he will be elected or not. I think Abu Mazen will be elected, and Abu Mazen constitutes an opportunity because I think he's the most moderate that the Palestinian can offer for the negotiation in terms of leadership, combining with, I think, wider base of credibility, not as much as Arafat used to have, but, you know, credibility mm-hmm. with moderation. I think there is an opportunity there. But to be more on the sort of pessimistic side here. Mm-hmm. I think what needs to be the change is some indicators on the Sharon government to realize the opportunity and not necessarily to, bring the unilateral disengagement plan as the resolution and not only the start for further withdrawal from the West Bank territory. Like Mazen Qupty said, the issue is not Gaza, but the issue is really whether the Israeli army will withdraw, dismantle settlements in the West Bank. The issue is not Gaza. The issue is the West Bank and the viability of Palestinian state. That's where the opportunity lies.
If Mahmoud Abbas is successful in putting a lid on Palestinian violence, do you have any confidence that Israel will pull back?
And you see, that's really the major question. I don't think the Sharon government and Sharon ideology, as I know it from the 90s and the 80s and the 2000s, and just the current policy in Gaza, is capable of taking such decision that will help Mahmoud Abbas or Abu Mazen in delivering a peace deal that the Palestinian people will agree.
Mohammed Abu Nimer, stand by there. We've got to take a short break. Naomi Kazan here with me in the studio. We're talking tonight about the Palestinians about to elect a new post-Arafat president. You can join the conversation 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Palestinians about to elect a new president this Sunday and hopes for a new engagement toward peace with Israel. You can join the conversation tonight. Can we get past the old deadlock here? What role should the United States play? And are you cynical about anything moving toward peace here? Or is this the time to really try? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight by Mohammed Abu Nimer, professor at American University, author of Dialogue, Conflict Resolution, and Change, The Case of Arabs and Jews in Israel. And with me in the studio tonight, Naomi Kazan. She was in the Knesset from 92 to 2003 as a member of the Meretz Party, former deputy speaker of the Israeli Knesset. She's now a visiting scholar at the Center for International Studies at MIT. Mike is calling from Reedsburg, Wisconsin. Hello, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. First of all, I think what should define all this conversation is we should start, and particularly you should start out by the assumption that, correct one, that Israel is an occupying power. And in answer to your question on what Israel and the United States can do, there are a couple of things that are basic, and I think if it was any other conflict, anywhere else in the world, would have been defined that way. First, you have to, Israel has to stop being an occupying power. Very basic. Second one.
In other words, you're saying, as Jimmy Carter did recently, this is just a couple of weeks ago, he said Israel must remove what he called its illegal settlements in the West Bank, that is the post-1967 presence there.
Yes. And then Israel has to, in order to gain at least some confidence on the part of the Palestinians that there's something moving, something going to move and towards the better, is to declare that it has no interest in keeping the territories within the West Bank and Gaza. Now, when we talk
and then
Gaza,
what about the Palestinians? What's required from them?
Well, what's required of them is, as an occupied people, is to see that there is some kind of compromise that could make them live in some kind of peace and see the light at the end of the tunnel.
But do they need to say unequivocally that Israel within those pre-67 borders, if it should even get to that, is inviolable, that they wholly accept it, forget the right of return?
No, I did not say that. There's a third component.
I'm just asking.
Third component is that Israel should be also able to declare its ideas, its plans, what is it that its vision as to how it's going to deal with the refugees in Lebanon and Syria and all that, whether it is the right of return on something else. There is where the negotiation is.
Mike, we've got it. Thanks very much for your call. Thanks for calling in. Naomi Kazan, let's just come back to this and try and deal with it. I'm reading here in the Financial Times where they say that it's sort of the hardline crowd in Israel that's welcoming this new opportunity, that there's more cynicism among the traditional peace camp in Israel. This is Financial Times' interpretation of Ariel Sharon's intentions now, even with a new president. You hear the caller saying, well, it's got to be complete withdrawal from settlements from the West Bank and Gaza. What's possible within the Israeli political equation?
I think lots of things are possible, but I think the question is getting the question right. Pretty much everybody involved in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has known for quite some time that a viable two-state solution is the objective of negotiations. This is one of the few conflicts that I recall where the problem is not the solution, but how to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the goal's there. Most everybody accepts it. Not everybody.
Not everybody.
But enough.
But I would say vast majorities in the Israeli public and the Palestinian public accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the question is, how does one go about now that there is an opportunity of reaching an agreement which is a viable agreement that requires compromises on both sides, which are going to be monumental, but we even know what the nature of the compromises are. Israel should make the basic gestures. There's no question about it. But I think there is a foundation for returning to the negotiating table around two or three basic principles. Number one, a viable two-state solution.
Hmm.
Number two, an interim ceasefire or anti-violence or non-violence pact in the interim, and number three, the easing of the daily life, something we heard from Mazen Kupti from Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
So to enable...
That means fewer roadblocks, fewer Israeli roadblocks. What exactly do you mean when you say that?
It means much greater mobility, but it means also possibility of livelihood because...
Jobs in Israel again? Open to that?
I am not opposed to it. Some Israelis are, but there has to be an economic rehabilitation of the West Bank and Gaza. The GDP there has dropped by close to 50%.
Pitiful, yeah.
It's really a very distressful situation. Around those principles, it is possible, with the models available, including, for example, the Geneva Initiative, which I was involved in, or the Ayalon.
Kind of shadow agreement, not accepted by the Israeli government, but a potential path.
But in all probability, any agreement, when it is reached, 90% of it will look like Geneva or the Ayalon Nuseba principles. We have a solid foundation. We have to get to the negotiating table. And this is where a series of incentives by the United States and the quartet can be very helpful indeed.
What kind of incentives to Israel?
I think Israel likes to be loved. And therefore, hugging Israel and making it do what it's capable of doing at this juncture, and what most Israelis really want, is going to be very helpful and can be very encouraging.
Mohammed Abu Nimer, Mahmoud Abbas has said that he is opposed to the militarization that's taken place in the Intifada. But he has also said, restated Yasser Arafat's minimum demands for a final resolution of this conflict. He said full Israeli withdrawal from the territories occupied in 1967, including East Jerusalem. Is that, can that be negotiable for a Palestinian leader? And if that's where he stands, if that's his bottom line, can a settlement be reached?
Well, you know, I think Mahmoud Abbas or Abu Mazen has very narrow margin for negotiation in terms of delivering a deal that's accepted to the Palestinian. And like Naomi said, and also your caller, the issues are clear. Viable two-state solution and no settlements or major settlements in the West Bank dismantled, no checkpoints, and resolve the refugee issue and Jerusalem as East Jerusalem as the capital. I think the package is clear what the Palestinian will accept as sort of a maximum or minimal alternative. The question if Sharon government can deliver that, and even if Abu Mazen is successful in demilitarizing the Intifada, and no Palestinian will fire any bullet against the Israeli and accept the occupation at least as it is right now for hope that Sharon will deliver, I think that's unlikely to happen, because there is, like the left in Israel and the center, there is not much of trust in the serious, sincere intention of Sharon to be able to deliver beyond the Gaza unilateral withdrawal. I would love to see a package where the Palestinian state and the dismantling of settlements and all the conditions that I know Abu Mazen agreed to them in Taba, but I don't think Sharon will be able to deliver. Let me just say a few words about the USA, because I think
please.
At this conjunction, it is where the U.S. and the European can help. Something like multinational peacekeeping force that will provide both security to Israel and assurances to the Palestinian.
Palestinians have called for that, but Israel's always rejected it.
But that's precisely one of the things where the U.S. can insist, especially if they are the leader of the peacekeeping force, and they can provide guarantee that there will be no firing of rockets and there will be no suicide bombers.
Tough to do. Even the Israeli military, which is all over the place, can't guarantee no rockets.
But I think if the multinational force comes in on the guarantee that there will be a viable two-state solution, dismantling settlement, or the package as we accepted it, saw it in Taba, I think there would be more space for such peacekeeping force. The second thing is economic aid from the European and the American to move a little bit of the livelihood of Palestinian after 4 years and a half of suffering during this intifada.
A lot of aid lost through corruption in the Arafat years. Do you think donors will be more confident under Abu Mazen presidency?
This is one of the things that Abu Mazen, I think, will bring, especially with the Barghouti strong opposition and narrative against the corruption. You know, there would be more accountability for the Palestinian National Authority, and that's where the U.S. and the donor community can play a role. The third point, I think, which we're really leaving out, is to put the pressure on the Arab countries like Jordan, as well Lebanon and Syria, to ease the condition of the Palestinian refugees in these host countries as well, and to have the Palestinian refugee issue again on the agenda. I think that's how Abu Mazen's credibility can increase. But most of all is the reduction in the checkpoints, in the increased mobility for Palestinian on the ground. It takes 2 hours to go from Ramallah to Jerusalem, where it's about 25 minutes.
Right. Let me get another caller here. Neil's calling from Swampscott, Massachusetts. Hi, Neil. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Great to be on again. I'm bringing a premise about historical precedent. As far as I've seen, the only one from the Arab world who's made major strides with Israel was Anwar Sadat.
Mm-hmm.
He did that because he came from a position of pride, having pummeled Israel to Suez Canal in 73.
Sort of.
Well, I think that's what allowed him to stand up with pride.
Mm-hmm.
And today I would say that the Palestinians can declare victory in standing up to Israel. Now,
what about Jordan's Hussein? I'd say he also had a fair amount of pride with in his dealings with Israel.
Right, but he kind of came in a side door. He didn't stand up and make a lot of noise about the discussions.
But what's your point, Neil? Do you think the Palestinians should stand up out of their current sort of very tough circumstances and with pride?
I think that they have two things to be very proud of. One is that they are standing up as a entity, and I think that the Palestinians will be the first Arab Muslim world to demonstrate democracy, and I think those combinations can be lauded by the Arab world. Then standing up with pride, I think that Abu Mazen can lead the Palestinians in being a bit flexible on some previously intractable positions like the right of return. And again, an opportunity. I'm not saying it's certain, but I think...
But start kind of declaring victory, adopting a position of pride and moving forward from there. Neil, thanks for your call. Naomi Kazan, how about it?
Thank you, Neil. Actually, you said, I think, a very important thing, and that is that it is possible to reach an agreement. But we also know very clearly that there's no military solution to the conflict. Mm-hmm. And I think what we have now is a maturation on both sides, really a maturity. I think most Palestinians understand that it's not possible, and most Israelis understand that it's impossible to defeat the will of the Palestinian people for self-determination through the use of force.
So maybe a general maturation, but what do you do about the hardliners on both sides who've found it so easy in the past to tip over the apple cart?
Only by creating coalitions. And I really returned to Boston after a brief stay in Israel. And after a visit to my Palestinian colleagues and friends in Ramallah, much more encouraged from that point of view.
The Palestinian side?
Both sides, mm-hmm. because there are many more contacts mm-hmm. than there were in the past few years, and there's an eagerness to develop these contacts. It's the first time I really think that civil society and public opinion has a role to play as well. And even though some of my colleagues on the Israeli side doubt that Sharon can do much more than carry out, implement his disengagement. Mm. That's a first step, and others can continue. In other words, we must, I repeat, must take advantage of an opportunity that will not recur.
Mohammed Abu Nimer, we've just got a minute left here. Do you feel that within the Palestinian community, a sense that enough blood has been let, it's time for a new perspective here, a maturation and potential in the conversation?
I feel that the two people, the Israelis and the Palestinian in their overwhelming majority, are in need and demanding a change for the current situation. The question if this coalition that Naomi is describing can grow strong enough to exercise pressure on Sharon to deliver more than the disengagement plan, and I hope, you know, both sides will work toward that. But unfortunately, without the U.S. involvement, I think civil society, as local or international, will only make a small dent. I hope that the political power in the U.S. will see it as a priority for the next few years to intervene actively and help with this situation. But I hope that the election on Sunday will move smooth and that the new leadership of the Palestinian will have a space to present what they have for negotiation, and they will have a true partners on the Israeli side. Hopefully Sharon can deliver what we all want him to deliver.
Well, there it is, the ray of hope streaming through that window of opportunity, springing eternal. Mohammed Abu Nimer in Falls Church, Virginia, at American University, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Naomi Kazan, former Deputy Speaker of the Israeli Knesset, always wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Mm-hmm.